Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It is Friday, August 1st, and this is Jeff Dunphy, and we are retooling for your coming of age. Today, we're going to talk about five things that cannot be changed, some givens in the human life, the unavoidable givens of human existence, and how they relate to us and the esoteric implications and the practical implications and the challenging implications of what this constitutes. Now, the first thing that cannot be changed in human life, and in all fairness, in all of life, I might dare add, is that everything will change and end. This is in complete alignment with the law of periodicities. We breathe in, and when we breathe out, there's a law of periodicity or a law of cycles. We blink our eyes, our heart beats, systole and diastole. There is day and night. There are cycles of the moon. There are eras, centuries, which, by the way, as we've seen throughout time, don't necessarily start at the very turn of the century, but they start at between the 10th and 15th year of the century. So just as the 1900s were shepherded in with the vile and nasty aspect of the First World War, which started in 1914, the 20th century is being shepherded in, or the 21st century is being shepherded in with the age of 2010 to 2014, which what we are in the middle of. And there are great changes here. There are changes in the millenniums, from the zeros to the thousands to the 2000s. There are changes in civilizations. The last three civilizations that have resided on the planet that have been in a physical manifestation would be the civilization of the Lemurians. The next civilization was the civilization of the Atlanteans. And this latest situation and civilization is called the civilization of the Aryans. Not the Hitler Aryans, blue-eyed Germans, so much as the Aryans of the next advance of humanity. So irrespective of skin color and irrespective of country or border, this civilization is the civilization of the Aryans. There are also geographical periods. As we know, if we tend to the ancient texts and the ancient wisdom, we know that geographically all of Atlantis was consumed by the sea, through earth changes, through volcanoes, through earthquakes, through shiftings of the ocean's waters, through the shifting of the planetary electromagnetic field. And this we see is happening today, where if you are a navigator of any sort, whether it be a pilot or a sailor, we do know, and it is a given, that true north and actual north are moving further and further apart. Magnetic north and true north are moving more and more apart. We talk of ages. We talk of a day of Brahma. And a day of Brahma is also called a kalpa. And one day of Brahma consists of 1,000 cycles of 4 yugas, or ages. And this brings us back to the secret doctrine, and it brings us back to the Book of Dzogchen. And these ages are called the Satya, the Tretya, the Dvapara, and the Kali. And the cycle of Satya is characterized by virtue, wisdom, and religion. It can also be called a golden age. There being practically no ignorance, no vice, and this yuga lasts, this particular kalpa lasts 4,320,000 years, and this part of the kalpa lasts 1,728,000 years. So it dominates, and it is the majority of time in this golden era. We hear oft times in the fairy tale books of a golden age. And dare we say that we are about to enter into a new golden age. This is the age of Aquarius, and we have to forego the age of Pisces in order to embrace and move into the age of Aquarius. So the Satya Yuga is the golden age. The next yuga is called the Tretya Yuga, and vice is introduced. And now it is no longer all good, but there is a bit of evil that raises its head every now and again. However, while the vice increases and the darkness and the evil presents itself, good bears out and wins the battle. This yuga lasts 1,296,000 years. Now next, we have the Dvapara Yuga, and there is an even greater decline in virtue and religion, vice and evil increasing, and the battle between good and evil is up for grabs. Good does not always conquer evil. And this yuga lasts 864,000 years. And finally, in Kali Yuga, the yuga we have now been experiencing over the past 5,000 years, there is an abundance of strife, ignorance, irreligion, and vice. True virtue being practically non-existent, and this yuga lasts 532,000 years. This is the part where evil reigns. This is the part where selfishness reigns. This is the part where most of mankind foregoes the phrase that we have constantly propagated, as go we, so go I. This is the place where everybody looks out for their own selfish interests, being completely unprepared and unaware to recognize that selfishness is a black hole that sucks you in and disallows you to become aligned with something of a higher order. Everything does change and end. The law of cycle, these are the cycles that we've just wandered through in a day of Brahma. We have various things that change and end. Now we bring it back more into the personal. We have the ending of our adolescence and the beginning of our adulthood, and some would say this ends at 21, some would say it ends at 25, and we step into our adulthood as we concretize our intellectual thinking and we march along. Now, how do we avoid, or how do we accept the aspect of changes? It is said by the biologists that our body is rendered new once again every 2 years. So every cell, every atom of your body is changed in 2 years. You slough off your skin, your hair grows, your fingernails grow, you extricate all aspects of your body. And so that every 2 years, every cell of your body is new. Well, now think of that. What a great example of the given that everything changes and ends. So you are a brand new person physiologically every 2 years. How evident is that? It doesn't seem to be evident because those cells that replace the old cells happen to look the same. So consequently, our eyes deceive us. And as one of the comedians was wont to say, who are you going to believe, me or your lying eyes? And I think there is an esoteric given in that very premise. We do have a propensity to believe our gross senses when we do and have and always will know better on the higher planes. We have these times. We change as we look in the mirror. We have a desperation not to change and not to embrace change with welcoming arms. Because as raising children has proven to many, just as you understand how the game works with the child, how to get them to bed, how to dress them properly, how to make them enjoy healthy food, how to do any of the nonsense that we do and the loving gifts that we give our children, just as soon as you think you've figured it out, the game changes. Everything will change and end. It ends in the birth of a child, as you can ask any parent. Didn't you think that life changes when a child happens? Absolutely. Little did you know how much a child changes and how much a child is the boss thereafter. When people die, lives change. When people go away or leave, or go away to grow, go away to school, go away to enter their next chapter, your life changes. The leaves fall off of the tree. They don't fall off of the tree by chance. They fall off of the tree by nature's design. It would be pretty odd if the leaves went from green to falling off the tree, not through the aspect and the season of the fall. Interesting. Everything will change and end. Now, one of the next givens, the next given that we're going to talk about today, is things do not always go according to plan. Ha! Boy, isn't that a gig, gang? Isn't that a gig? Now, there are interesting aspects of Mother Nature that seem to be in lockstep with a definitive plan. However, I often see and notice and want to illuminate, if you will, the very premise that oft-times your plans are not comprehensive enough about reality to be rendered in alignment with it. We talk about the challenges in life as not being meant to prevent us from fulfilling our life purpose, but more to teach us the value of perseverance. And the task that if there are things for you to do, done better by you than anybody else, then you better get on with it. I've recently had a very good friend have a massive heart attack just the other day. Boy, that was not something going according to plan. He has survived, and he is still in the hospital, recovering, with a whole new perspective on things that, I dare say, will give him insight into ways that nothing else could give him insight to. As we appreciate our own mortality, and esoterically, as we appreciate our own immortality in viewing that the body is not who we are, we look at things differently. And as Wayne Dyer is wont to say, and I'm sure it came from Buddha or Lao Tzu, when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. I happened to be witness to the musical Wicked a little while ago, and we have Glinda the Good Witch, and we have Alphaba the Bad Witch, the Wicked Witch. And we have a lovely iteration of telling a story that things are not as they seem. And boy, if when things do not always go according to plan, we can render ourselves, but for a moment, extricate ourselves from our attachment to it, and perhaps reiterate, things are not as they seem. Oftentimes things present themselves to us that we don't understand. However, when we embrace them with open arms and recognize that things are not as they seem, it gives us an opportunity to reevaluate and potentially embrace the life lessons that very issue of whatever the challenge is, whether it's a heart attack or whether it's misconstrued intentions, it gives us insight. I wrote some points down for some people a while ago, and it is always prudent to follow through on this iteration. How is it that we choose to interpret someone's intentions? Are we kind and gracious and empathetic? Are we mean and vicious and cruel in terms of interpretation of their intentions? The other one is managing our expectations, and that's quite germane to things that do not always go according to plan. As an old cliche goes, the best laid plans have an implication, and the road to hell is paved with good intentions. How often does a good plan get rendered askew? How often does a flight plan, for those of you who fly, those of you who don't fly, you will appreciate this, if you are off but half a degree and traveling at 500 or 700 kilometers an hour, it doesn't take you very long to get way off course. You're constantly recalibrating, constantly readjusting, constantly recognizing that things change and things do not always go according to plan. The challenges in life are not meant to prevent us from fulfilling our life purpose, but more to teach us the value of perseverance. Now, the next given is that life is not always fair. Now, this brings up a plethora of subject matter and a plethora of examples and implications of what happens when we embrace the context of life isn't fair. Do you think in Gaza, they're looking around thinking, this isn't fair? Do you think in Iraq, they're looking around and saying, this isn't fair? Are there various places all over the planet where people are looking at each other and saying, this isn't fair? Now, how do we approach this and how do we play with this? Do we seek revenge or do we seek reconciliation? Do we park ourselves in a place that says, you did me an injustice, so I will do you an injustice? Boy, I don't know about you, but I can hear a parent or a grandparent saying, two wrongs do not make a right. Revenge. It is an evil cycle of destruction. And we get to repeat it until we can come out the other side and recognize that the appropriate action may have everything to do with reconciliation. Now, recently in a very lovely YouTube video, I was witness to a man who is a negotiator in nasty situations in Palestine, in the Middle East, in various places, where he recognizes, acknowledges, and reconciles two opposing perspectives. And when we recognize and understand that everybody has a perspective, none of which will be the same, and many of which will be contradictory of others, we do get to see that life is not always fair. But as a great sage once said, there is nothing in the world that you cannot change but by a change in perspective. Now we look and we recognize and we have a great challenge sometimes when harm comes to the innocent. How is it that the religious ones would say, how could God see fit to compromise this child? How could God see fit to compromise this individual and strike them down in the prime of their life? How could God see fit? Well, we get back to the given, and that is, life is not always fair. And how is it that we should be so incredibly full of ourselves as to view things from only one perspective? I remember an incident in a hospital when a loved one of mine was dying. And across the room, there was another individual who was dying all the same. But they were dying in a far more boisterous and emotional fashion. And there were some around who wanted to extricate our loved one from that situation. And she, with grace and kindness and presence of mind, reminded us that now, she is going through a tough time as well. And it seems to her, her only capacity to perceive is her situation. A dying woman being kind to another dying woman. You don't have to look too far to recognize that while your situation may seem dire, and in fact terminal in this case, there is an aspect of mindfulness and presence and grace to recognize the trauma, the drama, and the challenges of others. How do we park our ego? How do we park our personality and recognize that when things aren't fair, it brings us closer to the most opportune question, and is, what is it that I can learn from this? Now, if you turn it around and look at the other side, how is it that when we are in residence of a place where we are feeling particularly lucky, particularly skewed to the benefits of being extra fair to us, how is it that we feel and think that we deserve that where we don't deserve things being unfair? It's an interesting observation, if I might add. Now, as life is not always fair, and as things do not always go according to plan, and how everything will change and end, the next given is an aspect of how pain is a part of life. Pain is a part of life. Now, pain, just like stress, is something that modern society seems to go out of their way to avoid. We find pain such an anathema that when we experience it, it leads us to do almost anything to alleviate it, or to eradicate it altogether. Back in my day, when I was a child, we had an enormous amount of tonsillectomies going on. You got a sore throat, remove your tonsils. The medical community at that time didn't seem to think that tonsils had any real value to the system, so they just lopped them out. And in fact, there was a period of time where you had a tummy ache that used to take out your appendix, having not the capacity to appreciate what the appendix might be used for. Oftentimes, the arrogance of the allopathic physician, the allopathic medical community, would have us look at the body parts and realize that they're not useful to us, so consequently, we could do without them. In true esoteric healing, part of the very nature of all of our body parts recognizes that it has many levels and layers of relevance. You have a stomach ulcer back in the day, prior to them discovering that ulcers were bacteria and could be dealt with antibiotics, what they used to do is sever the vagus nerve. This was called a vagotomy. And consequently, the severing of the vagus nerve, which is one of the most significant esoteric physiological entities in a body, the severing of the vagus nerve precluded you from evolving smoothly and in intercourse with the higher realms. We have muscle aches, let's take Advil. We're anti-inflammatories. We have headaches, let's take Tylenol. Let's run away from the pain because we're being victimized and We need to rid ourselves of it. Does it occur to any of us that pain may serve a purpose? We are told by the masters that pain is something that you recognize as a necessary part of your spiritual, physical, emotional, and mental evolution. Doesn't seem to make sense, does it? We have a conventional belief or embrace that everything is supposed to be swimming. Everything is swimmingly going according to plan. Everything is fine. We're happy all the time. There's no pain. Life is a bowl of cherries. Well, that's, as one of my teachers would say, hogwash. Now, as we become increasingly aware of man's holistic nature, modern medicine and the naturopathic holistic approach to it is being forced to look at and consider alternate methods for treating man's pain and stress. And those of us who are exploring man's whole nature go a step further and ask, what is the meaning of pain? What purpose does it serve? And why is it that one person seems to suffer more pain than another? These are good questions. They're not comfortable questions, but they are great questions. Now, as I just mentioned, there are various classifications of pain: the physical, the psychological, the emotional, and even the spiritual. And each type teaches us a lesson. In this way, we become equipped to teach others as we have experienced, should we so choose. Without pain, there would be no evolution on this planet. Let me say that again. Without pain, there would be no evolution on this planet. And it must always be borne in mind that there are two purposes of life on Earth. Firstly, to become enmeshed in the world. Enmeshed in the world and understand what it means to reside in the densest of forms, the physical body. To recognize that the physical body is a bit of a snare that takes us away from our awareness of the higher realms, and it is meant for a very specific purpose, for all that matters. There is a reason you have a body, and you need to understand that. If there was no reason to having a body, you wouldn't have one. And as we become enmeshed in the world, our next objective is to extract ourselves from it. And all in the meantime to help raise the consciousness of others, including other kingdoms, the animal and the plant and even the mineral kingdoms, around us as we do. It is a process fraught with pain and stress. How many of the diseases today are stress-related? Stress is a given to those who strive to enter into the higher kingdom. And the two signs of the zodiac that most closely relate to pain and stress are the sign of Sagittarius and the sign of Scorpio. Sagittarius relates to pain, and Scorpio relates to stress. Sagittarius rules psychosynthesis. And psychosynthesis is the bringing forth of the soul into the psyche so that the psyche can align itself so it can purposefully and with less stress and less resistance allow the soul to direct the personality. And while Sagittarius rules psychosynthesis and ever aspiring to higher goals, Scorpio rules death and regeneration, the incursions of energies and things that come suddenly from out of the dark. Have we seen some things out of the dark? Well, in a past program we talk about the black swan, events that nobody could foresee, yet happened. The black swan event would be the internet. The black swan event would be the 9/11 bombings of the towers in New York. on the path, on this path that we choose to walk for the benefit of the evolution of mankind, it is not enough to keep one's own head from going under. One must also, and at the same time, reach out and help another in their struggles. In consciously breathing for others, as it were, we help to reduce the amount of planetary pain on Earth. Reminds me of a time many, many years ago, about this time of year when I was learning how to scuba dive. And part of the process we were doing to learn how to scuba dive was having to tread water. And we were being taught by an ex-Navy SEAL. Well, this guy was hardcore. And in fact, I suspect his manner of teaching would not have been particularly embraced these days because he was harsh and he was tough, as he had been trained. Now, he had a group of 10 or 12 young individuals, not all men, but young individuals, and I'm sure his level of rigor was laughable in his perspective because of, respectfully, the level of rigor that he was trained as a Navy SEAL. However, he made us tread water for an hour. Now, the treading of water is not that difficult for a few minutes, and the treading of water for an hour, when you haven't done it before, seems quite onerous. But the buddy that I had brought into this particular program with me to learn scuba diving together looked at me about 7 minutes in and said, "Jeff, I don't think I can do this." So I paddled over to him as we were treading water together, and I put my right hand underneath his back, just gently, and gave him a hand while all the while treading water with my left hand and my legs. And from 7 minutes to 50 minutes into the hour, he let me help him because there was an upset and a concern and a fear overcoming him. And with 10 minutes left to go, he looked at me and he said, "I think I can do it now." To which I graciously thanked him for that and felt the next 10 minutes go by fleetingly and with a lightness of being that I hadn't known for the latter 43 minutes. I graciously helped and got him through that. Now we on the path, those of us who choose to help mankind, those of us who have chosen to come down and iterate ourselves in this realm, we might suggest that we are modestly developed men, and we correspond to the sensory cells of the planetary brain and their capacity to suffer, to feel, to absorb the divine incoming forces will determine just how much inspiration the planet will receive, how much of the stimulating energy which constitutes the driving power of evolution can be absorbed at that time. Just as pain will dilate the pupils of the eyes and let in more light, so planetary pain, endured by the few who are able to share it at any time, will permit a greater inflow of divine light or consciousness. Now, I have been witness many times to what have been classified as epileptic events or epileptic seizures. And, interestingly, the aspect of an epileptic seizure, as I was told a long time ago, is not so much a disease as it is the physical body being overwhelmed by electrical forces, electromagnetic energies flowing through the body, and the body's not ready for it. Now, it shouldn't be lost on us that many of the great forceful individuals who have changed the very course of history, the Julius Caesars, the Napoleons, the Alexanders of the world, were epileptics. And it might not be too far of a stretch to suggest that while their body was relatively incapable of receiving these higher electromagnetic forces and consequently buckled under the pressure from time to time as a result of the stress of them, they were nonetheless receiving forces from higher realms. And just as those, as I've talked about, those of developed men who are here to experience the pain of the evolution of the planet, let us always bear in mind that there is a reason for pain. What's the reason? What's the purpose? And how is it that some suffer more than others? Well, I trust this little iteration has given us an opportunity to give that a little ponder. And the last givens of the unavoidable of human existence that we're going to discuss today is people are not always loving and loyal all of the time. Now, how is it at times that the stressors of our lives or the lifelong influence of our childhood rears its ugly head and renders us terribly regretful in our state of reactivity? Now, I want to liken this to a situation that is very familiar and is also is all too common. And it would be the circumstance where a young child at 12 months or 9 months or 18 months or however old is sitting in their high chair holding a glass of milk, and they toss a glass of milk or a glass of juice or a glass of water on the floor, and their mother or their father, whoever is close by, instead of saying something that has no psychological effect on the child, they say something like, "Bad girl or bad boy, Tommy, for throwing your juice on the floor." Now, in fact, a child at that age does not have the critical faculty to come back to their mother and say, "Mom, you've been having a tough morning. Perhaps you had a fight with Dad and everything's not going accordingly and you're not present because really I'm not bad at all. I'm just clumsy and I'm just learning how to move my hands and arms, and I'm also experimenting with what things look like when I throw them up in the air." Nope. Not many 12-month-old or 18-month-old children has the capacity to have that conversation with their parents. And oftentimes parents at that stage, if they bear the slightest bit of presence of mind, will say, "Oh my God, I sound just like my mother." Which brings us to the great and obvious and a bit angst-ridden aspect that those parts of our parenting and our parents' parenting and our parents' 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 parenting come back to haunt us and bite us in the ass. The sins of our forefathers will be visited upon us, and that is their reactivity. They are reenacting. They are doing things without thinking. They are doing things without presence of mind. And consequently, we are victims, unless we are present, of the lifelong influence of our childhood. Things happened in our childhood that affect us even today. And consequently, as a result of your parenting, your parents raising you, you have deep-seated, embedded aspects of your nature and character that may be out of alignment with a conscious way of life. Now, do you need to know them all? No, not necessarily. And the psychological community would say, "Here, take my glasses of how to see the world and look at the world through these glasses and you'll be fine." I am of a different mindset, as many are who follow an esoteric path, and that is part of the waking up is realigning our thought processes so they are in divine alignment with Mother Nature's way. So that when you find yourself in reactivity about something that happened as a child, that formulates a meme, an M-I-M-E, a meme that compromises the very fabric in which you live your life, it is your spiritual obligation, not only to yourself, but to others, to your parents as well, is to realign that meme, realign that viral thought form that no longer serves you. Not only no longer serves you, but compromises the very fabric of the way you live your life. In a way, it's called getting out of your own way in order to become more aligned. Now, people are not loving and loyal all of the time. And when people are not loving and loyal and kind and gracious all of the time, and we are victimized by that, we are hurt and upset. Oh, and we're full of pain, right? And then we play the game of, are we victims? And we play the game of revenge or reconciliation. We play all of these psychological games. Now, there is an aspect of esoteric psychology that we have spoken of, and we will speak of again. But part of the game of understanding life is that people are not always kind and loving and loyal. And they will act toward you at times that will shock you. Now, that's a given. If you knew it was coming, it would be less of a shock. When you don't know it's coming, it is a big shock. However, those of you who are listening and those of you who are gracing me with your attention have the opportunity to see this coming and recognize that preparedness for this circumstance and the situation may very well prove helpful to you. Okay. When people are not loving or unkind or disloyal, it hurts. But what is it that it hurts? I dare say it would hurt our personality. Our personalities have a great vested interest in making us think that it is who we are. Well, I have said this not once, but many, many, many times, that our personality is not who we are. Our personality is part of us, just like our automobile is a part of us when we're in it, driving it. But God help any of us who would hand the keys to their car to the car and let the car drive itself with us being in it. It would lead to wreck and ruin. Ho, ho. Yet another cliche. Now, what is it about all these things that we need to give an audience to? The art of living life in alignment with the way, with the Tao, with the force, if you will. And it is important. It is very important. So as I say yes unconditionally to the givens of human life, that everything will change and end, things will not always go according to my plans, life will not always be fair or pain-free, and people will not always be loving, honest, generous, or loyal. And as I say yes to these givens of life, may I live in serene equanimity through storm and calm, clarity and uncertainty, gain and loss, praise and blame. And may I become a fulcrum of balance in ego's unwieldy world. That is good food for thought. And today I'm going to end our time together with a brilliant poem by an esotericist like us named Rudyard Kipling. If you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, if you can trust yourself when all men doubt you but make allowance for their doubting too, if you can wait and not be tired by waiting, or being lied about don't deal in lies. Or being hated, don't give way to hating. And yet, don't look too good, nor talk too wise. If you can dream and not make dreams your master, if you can think and not make thoughts your aim, if you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two impostors just the same, if you can bear to hear the truth you've spoken, twisted by knaves to make a trap for fools, or watch the things you gave your life to broken, then stoop and build them up with worn-out tools. If you can make one heap of all your winnings and risk it on one turn of pitch and toss, and lose, and start again at your beginnings, and never breathe a word about your loss. If you can force your heart and nerve and sinew to serve your turn long after they are gone, and so hold on when there is nothing in you, except the will which says to them, hold on. If you can talk with crowds and keep your virtue, or walk with kings, nor lose the common touch, if neither foes nor loving friends can hurt you, if all men count with you, but none too much, if you can fill the unforgiving minutes with 60 seconds worth of distance run, yours is the earth and everything that's in it. And what is more, you'll be a man, my son. Ladies and gentlemen, I wish to thank you very much for allowing me to be of service and for having your attention this day, Friday, August 1st, 2014. I am Jeff Dunphy, and this show is Retooling for Your Coming of Age. Thank you. Many blessings, and we will chat with you again next week.